Well, hey, yo, and here we go with another episode of We Talk Music on the Air and in Your Ear. Once again, I'm Martin. I'm joined by the King of the Casters, Mr. Brett Podcast. Brett, I'm very excited to talk to today's guest. You get the pleasure of introducing.
That's right. Well, we have a singer, a songwriter, a lawyer. He is many things in the business. We have Al Stahely. He is releasing Post Spirit 1974 to 78, Volume 1 on October 7th. And we are all wide-eyed and innocent today to happy to talk to him. Al, happy to have you on the show.
And Thanks, guys, for having me on. Looking forward to it.
Well, for sure. And so, of course, Wide-Eyed and Innocent is the first single, which is a great, fun song. And so we want to talk about that. We want to talk about the album. But, of course, you have two versions of it, which I think is super awesome. You have the 1978 version, and then you have the 2020 version.
That's right. The 1978 version was recorded with the Hodgy mobile truck for some of you who are audiophiles or audio knowledgeable from the 70s may know of it. It was at a house that I was living in. It was Austin Godsey's house. He was a recording engineer who had worked on many gold albums, Stevie Wonder, Lynyrd Skynyrd, and he had worked with Steve Cropper. And so that's how I got to know Steve Cropper. At that time, Cropper was living up on Mulholland Drive, and not far from where we were in Studio City. And so I'd gotten a record deal, finally gotten a solo deal, started the album, had Steve Cropper, had Gary Malibur on drums, who some of you may know, played on a lot of Steve Miller hits, played on Van Morrison's Moondance album and other Van Morrison stuff. And we had Pete Sears from Jefferson Starship, who had been a friend of mine. He came down from San Francisco. Had Snuffy Walden, who you now may know as the award-winning TV music guy from West Wing and many other TV shows. At that time, he was playing with me around LA when I was trying to get a record deal. Really wonderful rock guitar player. That's him playing the solo on Wide-Eyed and Innocent. And also we had Al Garth, who had left Loggins and Messina, and he'd been playing with me around LA. And plus he and I had done a tour with Chris Hillman, backing up Chris Hillman. As Chris didn't want to play bass, so I played bass on that tour. Well, that's Al playing sax. So I had all these great guys. I had Austin Godsey, who I already mentioned, but also Alex Cazenegras, who owned the Hodgy truck, had been the engineer on the Spirit Feedback album that we did, and also on the Stahely Brother album. So I'd known him for quite a while. Anyway, and so this project, we got halfway into it, the record company went out of business. And so that's why these have never been heard. These tracks have never been heard before, at least some of them. Not every track that's going to be on the album was recorded during those sessions. Some were before that at the record plant, and I can tell you more about that if you want to. But in response to mentioning the 78 and the 2020 version of Wide-Eyed and Innocent, the way that came about is it didn't really actually re-record it to be part of this project. Last August, during the pandemic, I spent the month out in West Texas, close to Big Bend National Park area, where we have a little place out there in a little town called Marathon, Texas. And it's about 40-45 minute drive from Marfa. And I was sitting out there after a couple of weeks, I was saying, you know, I've got all these songs I keep saying I'm going to record, and I haven't done them. And, I know two good I've heard that there's a studio in Marfa, and I know two good musicians there. One, Fran Christina, who is the drummer from the Fabulous Thunderbirds on all the records you heard of those guys, and a guitar player named Scrappy Judd Newcomb, who a staple out of Austin, but had relocated to Marfa. He had played with Ian McLaughlin's Bump Band. He played with so many, it still does, around Austin. And so I called them up, not really thinking I was going to do anything, but just kind of get these songs down with some good musicians. We did, and then Chris Marsh played bass. You might know him from playing with Eric Johnson for years, as well as other people. And because I didn't want to play bass on these songs, I'd ridden them on guitar and kind of wanted to play rhythm and as we were laying them down. And we got six done so quickly, and the guys were excited about the material. And they said, hey, you got to come back and bring five or six more, and you're going to have an album. So I did that about 6 weeks later. And in the course of doing that, I guess I had played them as we're sitting around wide-eyed and innocent, just acoustic guitar. And they said, oh, man, that's great. We want to record that. I said, well, I've already got a good recording of it, but oh, well, let us do it. So we did that, not really thinking I was going to release two singles, two versions together, but as part of this new project. And so I refer to this Marfa Sessions album as my accidental album, because I wasn't really intending to do it. But then as we're getting to release, getting ready to release the Post Spirit Volume 1, 1974 to 1978, it was Ron Stone, a manager's idea, to said, look, why don't we do something sort of surprising, release two versions of this. So that's what we did. And well, one interesting thing about that is one thing that makes the tracks different, besides the fact that different guys are playing on it, is I wrote the song in the key of D, but when we used to do it out in LA, do it live, always, if I was playing rhythm, I capoed the acoustic up, and we did it in E. And so we recorded the version out in LA in E, but about the only time I played Wide Eyed and Innocent since in public would be just with an acoustic guitar, and I wouldn't bother to capo it up. And I forgot that I used to do it in E, and so the 2020 version is in D. So whatever. Any rate, I'm just running away with your interview here, and I don't know if I'm telling you what you want to know.
Oh, no, that's good. You know, run away. This is not about us. This is totally about you.
Well, there's so many stories that tell me what you want to hear more about.
Let's see, everything. Let's start with that. But, you know, it's one of the things that I'll say is that, especially on the 2020 version, I mean, I do love the sound of the background, but your voice still sounds really good and really, you know, you're still hitting the notes. What do you attribute that to?
And no auto-tune, by the way.
Well, that's good. So,
yeah, well, actually, when I'll just give you an overview of what we're kind of planning for the next year and a half, 2 years, is obviously this volume one implies that there's going to be a volume two. And volume two is going to consist mostly of some stuff I did in the 80s with it. Andy Johns engineered and produced.
Oh, wow.
And Pat Thrall played guitar on, and Robert Palmer's drummer, Donnie Wynn, played drums. And we did that in Texas on a ranch that a friend of mine had about an hour outside of Houston, once again with a mobile truck. And it's going to have a different sound. But in between the release of Volume 1 and Volume 2, we're going to release the Marfa Sessions album that I was just telling you about. And I'm looking forward to that too, because that's something, you know, it's fun to, and to me, necessary to release some of these things that have been sitting around. But obviously, I'm kind of excited about releasing the newer product too. And when asked why, as some have, why are you releasing this old stuff now? Well, a combination of reasons. One, I'm 75 years old, and I don't want to kick off one day and have my son find all these analog tapes in a big plastic box and say, what do I do with them? But the main reason is, there were some, these things were done, some of them at the record plant. They were done with some of the best musicians in LA. They've been songs that I know people have liked over the years, have seen the reaction. And so it's not only gratifying to me, I think it's stuff that kind of needs to be out there, at least for the people who care about good analog 70s recordings. And I'm told that, because of the recent interest in the 70s LA music with, the Laurel Canyon documentary and the new book about 1974, and that this might be a nice time to do it. But the other reason, it really more important, is even though I've wanted to release it for a long time and knew I could just do a digital dump and just throw it all up there. And, these are songs and recordings that I spent a good part of my adult life doing. I felt it deserved more than the digital dump. And what's happened is, I went to Ron Stone, who had been our manager in spirit, and later started Gold Mountain Management, and they managed Nirvana and Bonnie Raitt and Ricky Lee Jones and all sorts of people. And I said, I want to do this, and I know it needs some digital marketing help. I don't know anything about that. And he said, well, let me introduce you to the guy that I use on all my stuff for all my clients. Jay Scavo, who used to be Warner, the digital guy at Warner's, now has his own company. And so we talked, and he really liked the idea. And so I went back to Ron and just said, hey, I want to thank you for introducing me. I'm going to work with Jay. And he said, well, I'm a manager, don't you? And I said, well, yeah, but I didn't think you'd want to be involved in this project. He said, no, I'll help you out. And now he's really gotten into it. And then Jay and they had, had worked with Mike, who I think contacted you guys from Earshot. And anyway, so this team has developed, and so we'll just see where it goes. Some of those recordings that are going to be on the this first October 7th release, that were not part of the Steve Cropper and recordings, were done at the record plant. And that all happened because Greg Geller, who was head of A&R at the time on the West Coast, had heard, I played him demos of a few new songs, and he said, hey, this is good. I'm going to give you a $5,000 budget to go record some more things. And then I'll send it to New York, and maybe we can get you a solo deal. So I said, great. And a couple of days later, he called me and said, John Boylan, he said, you know who he is? And I said, yeah, he used to manage Linda Ronstadt. And he said, well, he heard your stuff, and he's just signed on as a staff producer, and he'd like to work with you producing the demos. And so I said, okay. So I said, do you have something he's produced that I can hear? So he sends over a test pressing of a new act that hadn't been released yet. And I listen to it and I think, well, this sounds really good. It's not really what I'm doing, the kind of stuff I'm doing right now, but well recorded and very credible. Turns out that Test Pressing was the first Boston album.
Oh, jeez.
I wish I'd kept it. I wish I saw it. Yeah. I worked with John Borland on these demos, but went to Steve Popovich in New York, who was head of A&R, and he liked it and looked like a deal was going to happen. And then before a deal could happen, Steve Popovich left Epic to start Cleveland International with Meatloaf as his first act, you know. And then we had to wait for the next guy to come in. And at any rate, that deal didn't happen. So that's why the stuff that Boyland produced has never been released. So there's kind of a story behind all these recordings of why they've been dormant all these years, you know. Well, you guys heard the album, right?
That's right. That's right. Yeah. I mean, I got to say, love it. There's some wonderful, wonderful songs. I love the fact that, you know, you've got the pop. You've also got some like almost Flying Burrito Brothers-esque, you know, country tinge tracks in there. But it's hard for me to say, like Chipping Away, Safecracker, Tender Hooks. I love all those ones.
Oh, well, great. If you have any particular questions about those, I'm happy to answer them or try. But or if you want me to just keep riffing on stories from the 70s, I can do that.
Well, you know, one of the things, like, of course, going from Spirit into this, you know, how is it when you write songs? Like, are you aiming for a certain vibe, or do you just write based on what you want to write?
Well, I will tell you, no, okay, that's a good question, because after the breakup of Spirit, and then my brother did this, the Haley Brother album, which is when we found out the value of a brand name like Spirit, you know, although it was the same lead singer, guitar player, and songwriter that had been here for the last few years, because we didn't have that name anymore, which we could have kept, by the way, because we ended up owning the name when all the original members left, but we didn't feel comfortable continuing to use it. We did do an Australian tour, but Randy and Cass wanted to get back together, so we let them use it. But under the name Staheli Brothers, the agents couldn't book a tour that would even break even, so we really couldn't go on the road. And then my brother got offered the job of playing with JoJo Gunn, so I couldn't really ask him not to take it. And so at that point, I'm thinking, okay, and all these groups, they break up. I'm going to try to pursue a solo deal. And I'd always written some songs that might have been suitable for a solo, even on the Feedback album. There was, Mellow Morning, and there's some things that could have been on someone's solo album, or necessarily rock songs. But I did make a conscious effort at that point I want to write quality songs that I can present on a guitar, an acoustic guitar, and be suitable for a solo album. And so that there was that conscious effort. Now, within that, there were a couple of, sometimes I would write a rock solo. Just for fun, I wrote this little song called Crazy Like a Fox that I wasn't even doing that as part of my thing. But that ended up being the song that Keith Moon recorded on his solo album. And the way that happened was I was at a JoJo Gunn recording session, and the engineer was John Stronach, and he happened to mention that he was getting ready to start an album with Keith Moon. And I said, well, who's producing? And he said, Mal Evans. I said, Mal Evans, the Beatles roadie? If you remember from all of the Beatle movies, he was that big guy with blonde hair and horn-rimmed glasses. He said, yeah, Mal Evans. And I said, well, I might have a song or two for him. He said, well, come down to the record plant on Wednesday. I'll introduce you and bring a couple of songs. So I went down, met Mal, and played him one song. He said, I don't know. And then I played him Crazy Like a Fox. And he said, I could hear Keith doing that. We'll cut it on Friday. This was Wednesday. I thought this is the way song plugging should always be, you know, and has never been before or since for me. But anyway, I said, well, do you have all the players for the session? And he said, no. And I said, well, of course, I know the song, but also my brother who plays in JoJo Gunn, he knows it. He's played it with me. He said, why don't we get all of JoJo Gunn to play on it? So I said, okay, let me call him up. Hey guys, you want to play on the Keith Moon session on Friday? Yes, please. So they show up. We all show up on Friday. And in addition to me and all of JoJo Gunn, there was Spencer Davis. So I was playing acoustic 6-string. Spencer Davis sitting next to me playing acoustic 12-string that I guess Mal had called. Besides my brother on electric, Jesse Ed Davis was in there. Although if you listen to the Keith Moon single, when it comes to the solo, that's my brother John playing the solo. And Keith on one set of drums, and Curly Smith, JoJo Gunn's drummer, on another set of drums. And the basic track was recorded like that. That's the way they wanted to do it. Two sets of drums. Two electric guitar players, bass player, keyboard, acoustic 6-string, acoustic 12-string. You know, as you know, that's a pretty unusual way to cut a basic track, but that's the way it was cut. And then I got out there with Keith, because obviously he just probably heard the song the day before. And I had the lyric written out and put it on a music stand. And I had the headphones on, and he had his headphones on. So I was kind of cueing him where to come in. And he had a bottle of Cavassier in his left hand and was kind of reeling around and singing, stand back. You got to give the girl room to move. She's crazy like a fox. And that fox got her eyes on you. I mean, it wasn't really singing, but it was exactly what you hoped Keith Moon would do. Put his personality all over it. And then, that was a nice interlude that happened in between all these sad stories I'm telling you about recordings I did that never saw the light of day during that period. And so I got to know Keith a little bit and spent a little time up. He was renting a place up in Benedict Canyon, and he invited my girlfriend and I over for dinner, and my girlfriend was English. And so it was interesting because, you know, he's known for being this, you know, wild and crazy guy, which of course he was. But I don't know if it was because my girlfriend had been to an English girls' school and had a proper accent, but the whole evening he was talking, he was being very proper and talking in a very proper English accent. And, We had a great time, and it's really I wish he was still with us.
Yeah, don't we all?
Actually, do you want to hear one more Keith Moon story?
Yes, you betcha.
One thing he told me that I've never seen written, not that I've read everything written about Keith Moon, but I've never run across it. Well, one thing, he on his album, he didn't play a whole lot of drums. And I was asking him, I said, how come you're not playing more drums on your own album? He said, well, I got my hand I hurt my hand. I said, well, how'd you do that? He said, well, when we were doing the Tommy movie, Oliver Reed and I, in our costumes and full makeup, when we had a little break, went across the road from the studio to the local pub. And we were in there, some of the locals started giving us a hard time, and we gave them a hard time back. And this guy pinned my hand to the table with an ice pick, and it kind of severed a ligament in there. And so I'm having a little tough time with my, I think it was his left hand. And I said, well, you know, don't you think, you know, you are Keith Moon, and don't you think you maybe should think about seeing a hand specialist? Well, yeah, I guess so, maybe. But I mean, I couldn't believe that, you know, he hadn't done anything about it, apparently. And so he was still playing, but not playing that much on his own album. But anyway, I digress.
Oh, no. I mean, that's crazy. But yeah, I mean, of course, Keith Moon. Wow. That guy, I mean, amazing talent. Like, you know, and I think that so far, that's the biggest problem with your career is that you needed to run into better talent, because really, I mean, where is it all?
Yeah, no.
I had a chance. Go ahead.
I'm sorry, Martin. What did you say?
I was just going to say, I mean, yeah, you had a chance to share a stage with you know, one of my all-time favorites, Roy Orbison. That just, I mean, anybody who's been around him, to me, is just, that's a legend beyond legends, you know?
Oh, I agree. We that was after I just moved back to Texas, and I was doing some gigs around Texas with, well, my brother, Donnie Wynn, who I mentioned earlier, Robert Palmer's drummer, and Glenn Fukunaga on bass, who I don't know if you know, he is a great bass player from Austin, who's played with Dixie Chicks and all sorts of people. And so we got to open for Roy at the Tower Theater in Houston. And it was so cool because, you know, it was an older crowd, obviously, in the audience, and you kind of, they looked uneasy, sort of. I don't know if it was because at the time I was like, well, maybe they haven't been to a concert in a while or something. Roy comes out, and the first time at the end of one of his songs where he hits one of those high notes, it's like you could feel that everyone in the auditorium just relax. It was like, I don't know if they were waiting to see if he could still hit those high notes or what, but when we came off before our show, before we went on, he said, nice little combo you got there. And what cracked me up is that that was the first time I'd heard the word for a band called a combo since the 60s. But that's what he referred to us as, a combo.
That's terrific. Oh, he's such a legend. Absolutely. I don't know if anybody ever had a better singing voice than Roy Orbison, so I'm glad he was still hitting those notes. One of the other names that we got, you know, a list of different people you worked with that really stood out to me is Rodney Dangerfield, of all people. I know Rodney was famous for having people visit him in his dressing room and being naked except for a bathrobe that he tended not to close. I'm hoping you didn't have that experience.
Luckily, I did not have that experience, but I'll tell you how that happened. This was the same promoters who put me on the Roy Orbison show here in Houston. At the time, it was Pace Concert. This was right after Rodney had that big hit movie. And so he wasn't playing clubs. He was playing, you know, a few thousand seat auditoriums. And so they called me and they said, hey, we need you to open two shows in Dallas for Rodney Dangerfield, but you can't take the band. He just wants a solo act. I said, okay. So I go up to Dallas and I get there afternoon, sort of looking, you know, see if there's a sound check or whatever. And I noticed some guy walking around kind of slumped over, and he's got kind of curly hair and stuff. And it took me a while seeing him walking around to realize that's Rodney Dangerfield. But his hair wasn't slicked back. He wasn't standing with his shoulders back, you know, like he always did when he was working. He was kind of slumping around. And but I finally recognized him. I said, Mr. Dangerfield, I'm Alistair Haley. I'm your opening act. And, you know, he said, I think I'm supposed to do a 30-minute opening set for you. He said, yeah, think you can hold them? I said, I'll certainly try, Mr. Dangerfield. And I watched it. He had the promoters furnish him with the plant. And I heard him instruct the plant. He said, okay, start over on the out in the audience. It's kind of on the stage right. And when I say, and he told him what the line was, you heckle me. You yell out this other line, to which he had naturally the perfect put down response to. He said, then after that, he said, kind of slowly work your way over to the other side. And he instructed him to do the same thing for a different joke. And I thought, man, what a pro. I mean, this guy, his own crowd comes to heckling because the whole no respect thing, right? And so the way he deals with it, he hires his own heckler. And to do it twice, to probably keep other people say, oh, I better not heckle him because he can put me down right real quick. And so that that was my Rodney Dangerfield. So luckily I didn't have the
secrets
bathroom.
The secrets of entertainment. The secrets of entertainment. Who knew?
I feel like you have a lot of the secrets of entertainment. I mean, between your music career and then your career as a lawyer, you know, talk about behind the curtain.
Well, I guess I have seen a few things. You're right. But anyway, the volume 2 thing that we're going to have out later, like I said, with Andy Johns, is going to be interesting too, because it's like these recordings on this volume 1. I mean, you can probably tell it's from the 70s just by the songs, the playing, and the recording. Am I right when you listen to it?
It certainly has that 70s feel, that 70s vibe. Now, that being said, I am hearing a lot more songs that have a similar feel and vibe, but you know, it's definitely, this is very true.
Yeah, and the volume 2 will have much more of an 80s sound, the way Andy produced it too. And even though Andy, you know, obviously did great work in the 60s and 70s, I guess he was, you know, he was trying to produce a record for the 80s, and so that will be something different. And then this Marfa thing is going to be a whole other thing. But anyway, I'm glad you enjoyed the album and pointed out certain songs that resonated with you.
Oh, sure. And I know I certainly intend to listen a few more times, but you know, Al, it's certainly been great having you. And I know that there's oodles of stories that I want to get to, but I figure that we'll just save those until you come on for the Marfa album, and then you'll have to come on for the volume 2 as well. And then we can keep squeezing some of the stories out.
Yeah, there's more. So, yeah, yeah. Okay, guys, thanks so much for having me.
For sure. Yeah. Thank you. And just before you go, tell everybody where they can keep up with you and where they can find everything.
Yeah. AlStahaley.com. The only thing hard about that is spelling Stahaley. It's S-T-A-E-H-E-L-Y. And you're right. Saying, what? No, that can't be right. But no, it is S-T-A-E-H-E-L-Y. So AlStahaley.com, and there's a website up there, and we'll let you know what's going on. And for those of you in the Houston and Austin area. We're going to be doing a gig in Houston October 26th at McGonagall's Mucky Duck, and at the Saxon Pub in Austin on October 30th. So, at any rate, I got to start listening to some of your other podcasts. What else you got coming up?
A few hundred of them.
That's right. Yeah, there's no question. We stay busy too. So it's
all good. Thank you very much, sir. This has been an absolute pleasure for us.
Yep.
Okay. Thank you, guys.
Yeah, thanks a lot, and we will talk to you again.
Okay.
Bye. All right. Bye now.
You had a smooth face and a clean slate, but now they're both etched deep with lies. Oh, the wide ambitious, that world looked so delicious, but you went back for seconds too many times. Moon, oh, we fell in love in the soft pale light of a sweet summer. We used to see jaded dreamers who've been stepped on one too many times. Ooh, you could not understand how they could be so weak. Your slip is showing and your soul is slipping down into the streets, and your smile's so rustic I can almost hear it sweet. Love in the soft pale light of a sweet summer moon.